The Guardian.
Margaret Curran, Scottish Labour Party, 10,912. John F. Mason, Scottish National Party, SNP, 11,200.
Yes, the Scottish National Party did it. In the early hours of Friday morning, they snatched Labour's 25th safest seat in Britain when they won the Glasgow East by-election on a 22% swing. John Mason, who turned a Labour majority of 13,500 into an SNP majority of 365, said the result was grim news for Gordon Brown.
The SNP called on the people of Glasgow East to send a message. To send a message to Gordon Brown and Labour government that they are out of touch and that the SNP is on their side. That message is clear. It's time for change.
I'm Nick Watt, and in this week's edition of Politics Weekly, we'll be asking what the by-election means for Scotland, Britain and the Prime Minister. Joining me to discuss these matters is the Scottish political commentator Leslie Riddick. Hello, Leslie.
Hello there.
We have Sunder Catwalla, the General Secretary of the Fabian Society. Hello, Sunder.
Hello.
And finally, we have Tom Clark, the Guardian leader writer, who used to work as a government special advisor. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Well, earlier I spoke to Severin Carell, the Guardian Scotland correspondent, who stayed up into the early hours of Friday morning covering the by-election. I began by asking Sev what on earth has happened. Glasgow East was Labour's 25th safest seat in Britain and its third safest seat in Scotland, but no more.
That's right. For the first time since 1922, apart from a very brief hiatus shortly after the Second World War, Glasgow East is no longer held by the Labour Party. They were given a very sound kicking yesterday by the Scottish National Party and local voters, losing by a fairly tight margin, but nonetheless it's an historic victory for the SNP. They achieved a near 23% swing on the night, which actually puts pretty much every Labour seat in Scotland at risk, if it would be repeated.
Including the Labour seat held by the Prime Minister. You do begin to wonder that if he can't win in Glasgow East, where can he win?
Well, the difficulty for the SNP and, in a sense, for the Labour Party is trying to gauge precisely where this victory rests on the gradient between a deliberate by-election protest vote by Labour voters who want to send a really sharp warning to the Labour Party, or evidence of that seismic shift that the SNP claim is happening within Scottish politics. I mean, there is a component of this win which is undoubtedly down to the SNP are now much more popular across Scotland than they ever have been before. But at the same time, the SNP have won a number of really historic by-election victories against Labour over the last 40 years, and on every single occasion they've lost the seat again at the next general election. On the other hand, Alex Salmond's popularity at the moment in Scotland is tremendous. The SNP administration in Edinburgh seems to be very, very successful, and Labour are really, really struggling to make any impact on that SNP popularity at the moment.
That was Severin Carell. Leslie Riddick, let me turn to you. So Sev says this is the first time since 1922 that Labour has not held Glasgow East. Can you just set this in context for us?
It is really quite extraordinary, and I don't know if those folk listening have got enough places that have been absolute strongholds of Labour with everything that means to be able to really get a feel for this. I mean, Glasgow East, nobody probably needs telling now. It has got all the multiple deprivation index. It's right up there. It's got some of the lowest life expectancy, lower than Iraq for men. It has huge problems of unemployment, drug abuse, the works. The question, I suppose, has been that up till now, and I think practically all commentators called this wrong, because I thought...
A rare bit of honesty there.
I think
congratulations.
We've all got our hands up here. Because much as one might think that, you know, Glasgow East has been in effect given such a kicking by Labour, perhaps by the things they have failed to do rather than any kind of deliberate action, but nonetheless, 22 years to still have those indicators on health and poverty is not an achievement. But, you know, there's been elections before where you'd have expected people to turn if they had been intending to, if they had any chance of breaking the Labour habit, and they didn't do it. So I think we all thought it's not going to happen this time, and we were wrong.
So Tom Clark, Leslie Riddick saying there that the commentariat in Scotland said that it wasn't going to happen, and it did happen. If Labour can't hold their 25th safest seat in Britain, it's all over, isn't it?
It's starting to feel like it might be. I mean, I sat here, Nick, with you a few weeks ago and we were talking about Crewe, and I was saying Yes, Labour has gone down, but, you know, it was a type of swing. It was a 17% swing against Labour, of the type that compared with some of those that Margaret Thatcher and John Major had undergone before they'd come back and recovered. This time, though, it's worse, and it's significantly worse. It's a more like a 23% or 22.5% swing. And whereas Crewe, I think, was something like Labour's 150th safest seat, this is its 25th safest seat. And there's not, obviously, there's only 24 seats that that it could rely on holding if it can't hold this one. It's an appalling state of affairs. The only thing I'd say in terms of what it means for Labour nationally is, obviously, and we should come on and talk about this, is that it is in Scotland, and Scotland is now a different political country from Britain, and it's operating as a choice between two governments rather than a choice between Labour on the one hand and the Conservatives who are in opposition on the other. The SNP government in Holyrood and then the Labour government in Westminster was the choice on offer.
Yeah, we're going to come on to discuss Scotland and what this by-election means for that in a sec. But Sundar Katwala, the General Secretary of the Fabian Society, let me turn to you now. Tom Clark says this is an appalling result. Do you think that you could possibly say, Labour can possibly say, look, this is midterm, midterms, governments do badly, they lose by-elections, you shouldn't read too much into this, or is this really dreadful?
It's an awful result. They shouldn't be complacent about it and say this is normality. On current form, Labour probably wouldn't win a by-election anywhere. Whether you can be competitive and make a fight of the next general election is a slightly different question, but not if you just wait for something to turn up. So I think the SNP did very well in being a catch-all party, and the fact that they were the SNP didn't cause any problem in voters switching to them on food prices and petrol prices and the 10p tax rate. And the Conservatives did the same in Crewe. So it seems that all of the opposition parties can now, you know, sweep up against Labour in by-elections. And the problem is Labour voters probably don't know what they're voting for.
OK. Tom, go on, yeah.
So we're all agreed that it's a very, very dire result. And then there is a question about if Labour did something different, could it recover? But listening to Des Brown, who's a very good minister, I think, on the radio this morning, I mean, all he was able to say is the same sort of, we'll listen and learn, 64 quarters of economic growth and, you know, tough choices. And lots of talk about tough choices and decisions and action and planning for the long term, but very little content. All this generic language about we're going to keep making tough strategic choices, we'll get there in the end. But what they're not doing is explaining to people where it is that they're taking them, where the end is. It's just, it's muddling through, dressed up with some very tough talking.
Leslie.
Is anyone old enough to actually hear those words from the likes of Des Brown and hear the aftermath of John Major? You know, as that government was falling down the tubes, it was all the same denial, which was to say there was nothing wrong with the policy, nothing wrong with the people, nothing wrong with the moment. Mm. It was all to do with the delivery. Do you
getting
remember that?
Getting our message across.
Yes, that was all
phrase.
That they were getting wrong. And when eventually the Tories bit the dust, then there was the, you know, acceptance, and then there was the realisation that there was something much, much bigger that was wrong, and there was going to take several goes to even begin to tackle it. And I think that's the difficulty for Labour. They're so far from one step and they're free. The thing that I think unites the Scottish and Crewe and Nantwich results is the key thing, which is there are viable alternatives. And the characteristic that you picked up, which is, yes, that there is a different Scottish political reality now, nonetheless, the thing here is that folk can look at the SNP and they don't scare the horses here. You know, all the predictions have not come home here, have not come true. And equally, south of the border, David Cameron is looking like a reasonably safe pair of hands. And that's why folk who have been Labour, lifelong Labour supporters, are finding it possible to do the unthinkable.
Sundar.
This is what links, I think, the Scottish parliamentary elections, this by-election, the Crewe by-election in London, is that Labour, only a few years ago, could win by saying, but the risk of change is greater. That isn't enough for Labour. So it isn't a question of not getting the message across. It's the question that you haven't been putting out a positive Labour message, what the Labour case for fairness is. And you've got to start by constructing the message, not to complain about the communication of it.
Leslie, can I just ask you, you're saying now that the SNP clearly is a very serious threat to the Labour Party in Scotland. But can I just ask you, are they doing well now because the SNP is genuinely governing well in Holyrood, or is it because the Labour Party is deeply unpopular and it's a reaction against that, Or is it simply that Alex Salmond has this extraordinary personal charisma?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the above. But, you know, it's interesting because I heard the SNP on talking about the kind of changes that they had made to try and tackle the current problems ordinary people are facing with money, whereas Gordon Brown had done nothing. And the list included cutting business rates, cutting prescription charges and abolishing tolls on bridges, none of which would apply to voters in probably in Glasgow East, which is a low rate of business formation, where most folk, if they're in benefit, won't pay those charges anyway, and where there are no bridges because there are no rivers. So, you know, a lot of the kind of stuff that's been chucked up there as the banner headlines don't apply in this constituency. The SNP are now running into trouble over some of their big proposals. They want to change the council tax and replace it with a local income tax. That is proving to be a bit of a nightmare, and almost every part of civil society is now turning around saying, you know, I don't think this is going to work. Equally, they don't want to use the private finance initiatives that have been commonplace across Britain. But their alternative, which is to try and set up some kind of trust, is being stymied by the fact that they can't issue bonds because they don't control the levers, the financial levers of power, which Westminster does. Now, this isn't a huge problem for them to the degree that they can come back and say, you see, this is what happens when we ain't got control of everything and we are a minority party, so we can only get away with those ideas that we can persuade other parties to back. This was in our manifesto, but we are not a majority that can definitely make all our commitments turn into practice. So I think at the moment, the jury's still out. I think a lot of commentators are very worried about these big financial packages that they're not managing to convince people to accept. But politically, it's not doing them too much harm yet.
And Tom Clark, can I just ask you, how do you see that from what Leslie's saying? How do you see that going for the SNP? On the one hand, they've been in government for over a year. Things get difficult. They want to do things. There's a lot of opposition. They'll get unpopular because governments get unpopular. Or could it be, as Leslie says, hey, guys, we don't have all the levers and guess how we can get those?
I think it's looking like it's going that way. I mean, Leslie will know far more about this than I do. But as I understand it, we've just seen for the first time opinion polls when it comes to Westminster voting rather than the Holyrood voting that has put Alex Salmond in power. That shows that the SNP are now slightly ahead of Labour. So that would suggest that they get more votes in a general election, whereas they did quite badly last time round. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of it, I understand from my friends in Edinburgh, isn't so much... it's obviously Alex Salmond is charismatic and he's getting on with things and he's not got all the levers and so he's got good excuses where things aren't working out. But I think a huge part of it is Labour failure. I mean, what people say to me is that Scottish Labour is so used to being in power, especially now that for 10 years you've had the Labour government down here as well, and it's sort of in shock. It's forgotten how to be an opposition party. So it's doing things with, say, free prescription charges. It's making nerdy points and picking technocratic holes in it about how some of the people who might be getting this could afford to pay for it and you could spend the money on tax credits or something instead. But if you're an opposition party, you don't need to run around opposing popular things like free prescription charges.
Sunder is nodding.
Well, what I think a lot of people in Scotland wanted is they wanted an alternative, so they didn't have one party politics. So an SNP not going for independence now on day one therefore offers you that alternative, and they're playing that role well. Labour, I think partly also because of the Wendy Alexander affair, is still in post-traumatic shock. They've been the leading party forever and they need to build from the bottom. The shocking thing here, they'd never canvassed that constituency. They'd never thought about it at all. So they need to really look at that. The danger, as Leslie said, is that the SNP, when things go wrong in midterm, get to use it to create conflict about the system and about the constitution. And that's a gamble, but it's obviously a gamble at some point they want to take.
But that's the thing. See, I think lots of people, but certainly the Scots, like someone who takes a risk. Now, of all the stuff that's been happening lately, Gordon Brown, Mr. Prudence, does not reflect, you know, that wee little bit of that little chink that people just want to see somebody pushing a boat out a little bit after years of tedious, jargon-ridden rubbish where nobody can even say someone is poor anymore because that word has been banned in a constituency with dreadful poverty outcomes. So, you know, somebody who comes in, as Alex has done, and he was the one, remember, who said that Scotland would be free by 93. He was wrong. And that was part of the reason, I think, probably that he stood down and he was pilloried for making that prediction, chancing his arm and failing. And here's this guy back again a decade later, chancing his arm again with this political earthquake, putting his mug around that constituency big time. So nobody was going to be in any doubt that he had failed if his candidate didn't win. And he won. Now, actually, people like a winner and a winner who has won from the front.
Sorry, Tom, do come in.
Just one other thing. I mean, the really big argument, obviously, in Scotland now is about the referendum and whether we should have a referendum, whether there should be independence. Looking at it from south of the border, it looks like Labour has got no idea, including Gordon Brown, on what the strategy should be. And if you haven't got a strategy, then the running's there for Alex Salmond to make, and he's making it.
Leslie, can I just ask you on that? Obviously, Tom Clark there saying that Labour doesn't have a strategy. Indeed, they lost their leader of the Labour Party in the Holyrood Parliament. And one of the factors that obviously got her into trouble was that she tried to outflank the SNP on a referendum. The SNP is saying, let us govern for a bit and then we'll think about having a referendum. And Wendy Alexander said, no, bring it on, only for Gordon Brown to deny that she'd said that. What's going on? Where is the Labour Party on this issue?
Well, dear knows, because the other characteristic that equally reminds me of the last days of the Tories is that you don't get anyone to come on and explain things. And if you do, it's such an opaque and, you know, explanations that clearly seem to be walking the face of reality that I think people just tend to have the dump button on. So I'm not sure anybody really has a good sense of where they are. I think it was probably not a bad move of Wendy's to try and think of something a little bit radical, because after all, the longer this goes on, and, you know, again, Alex has been very cute with this and has allowed the thinking that 2010 will allow another UK general election to happen. All the indicators are that Labour will lose. That is the best time once you've got the dreaded Tories in again. And if you notice, even though the Tories got into third position in the by-election, they still haven't had anything like the Cameron bounce north of the border, because I think Scots will take a long, long time to get Margaret Thatcher out of their collective communal memory. So what happens then is that you've got a situation where Alex Salmond is able to say, look, the dreaded class enemy are now wielding the levers of power in Westminster. Do we want them running us? And he's therefore, the longer it goes on and the more Alex is able to leave that decision until the first few controversial moves by David Cameron put the wind up the Scots, the more likely he is to get a yes vote. So Wendy was quite right. It was right to try and bring that referendum on as fast as possible.
I think there was a lot in Wendy Alexander's strategy. The SNP got everything they wanted to last night, but they didn't win this by-election on independence. And we need a serious thought about whether we want Alex Salmond, if we believe in the union, to choose when to hold a referendum at the moment of maximum danger for the union. I think anyone who's a unionist has to do that. Exactly.
I mean, the thing that I must say, you just sometimes sit back and just, you know, suck your breath in awe at the sheer cheek of the man. But what he's offering, once everybody else said, you know, there's other solutions on the table, you might just want the status quo, you might want fiscal autonomy, that's just some more power short of independence. He said, you know, that's fine, let's take all these different options and have a multi-option referendum on it, which would allow STV to be used, which would allow his favoured option to be approved on a 33% vote, because other transfers would come as those other options were knocked out. So, you know, somebody really has to be brave and bold here and walk in, because I think you're quite right. It shouldn't be a political party that decides the framework of what happens next to the UK. But unless all the parties and the government, Labour government, step up now, that can be what will happen.
Before we go on to discuss the future for Gordon Brown, can I just ask you one question, Leslie? You said that a potential Conservative government would have a huge impact on the timing of a referendum. Can I just ask you, obviously the Tories did not do brilliantly in that Glasgow East by-election, but David Cameron did go up to the constituency and did make a very significant speech about the broken society, Britain's broken society. Where are the Tories in Scotland?
Well, it's strange because Annabel Goldie is held in some sort of anti-like respect and kind of fondness, I think, by a lot of Scots who wouldn't dream of voting for her in a month of Sundays. And it's a curious one where I think people can hear and agree with much of what the Tories come out with and still have no feeling for them as a group of people that they want to vote for. It's a huge problem for them. And yes, I think people were impressed that David Cameron and quite a rank of the Luminaries luminaries of the Tory party had bothered to come north. They were quite impressed by IDS coming those years ago and having his road to Damascus moment, I think, in Easter House. But, you know, to a degree, people have counted them in and counted them out. You know, folk that come from elsewhere, that come only to Scotland to visit the Edinburgh Festival, that turn up somewhere that's very real, get totally shocked and have a life-changing experience. See you again in another decade with another couple of people who haven't got the message. I don't know that Scots are tremendously impressed by the long-term staying power of the Tories. And there's just such a bitter memory of Thatcher and the closure of practically everything that knitted together Scotland's previous identity as a focus of craft workmen, particularly on the Clyde, who were, you know, the kings of labour. That went. People, I think, are still in grief about it. Personally, I think that's what a lot of the ill health in the East End is to do with. And until somebody can tackle that, and it would be brave for the Tories to be the ones who tried to do it, they're not going to get anywhere near the psyche of the West of Scotland in particular.
OK, thanks for that. Now, before we discuss the future for Gordon Brown, we're going to hear from Simon Hoggett, The Guardian's parliamentary sketch writer, who gives us his assessment of the Prime Minister's year in the House of Commons.
Questions to the Prime Minister.
Gordon Brown's not done very well in the chamber, it has to be said. He's not done quite as badly as some people claim and as some people think. But what Mr Brown does is repeats himself. He thinks if you say everything over and over and over again, it will finally get through. And he may indeed be right. So, for example, his line on knife crime has been punishment, enforcement and prevention, or sometimes enforcement, prevention and punishment. He changes the order, but he says it over and over again.
Tougher punishment, tougher enforcement and tougher prevention.
Enforcement with visible policing in our communities punishment. And community support officers. Tougher enforcement, tougher prevention.
Trouble is that he hasn't yet filled in the specifics. It's all very vague. I think people are getting just a little bit tired of that. They want a few specifics. They want to know that there is a real effort to find solutions for our problems going on. It's not just a matter of finding a form of words which can be endlessly repeated. That, I think, is why Labour MPs are so miserable at the moment. As one ex-cabinet minister put it to me the other day, they're in despair, but they're not desperate. They're in despair because they've decided there's almost no way Labour can possibly win the next election, but they're not so desperate that they're actually going to do anything to get rid of Gordon Brown. And one reason is, of course, that even a new leader probably wouldn't win. So you might get someone like Alan Johnson, the Health Secretary, or David Miliband, the Foreign Secretary. They might conceivably run. Even Harriet Harman's name has been mentioned, goodness knows why. But if they got the job, it's pretty certain that they'd go down to defeat anyway, and who wants to take over the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg?
That was Simon Hoggett. Tom Clark, let me turn to you. So Simon says the Prime Minister has not found his feet in the Commons and the Labour Party is the Titanic after it hit the iceberg. Is it over?
It's not over until you've lost the general election, but it's increasingly hard and now very hard to see how Labour's not going to lose the election. As Simon says, you know, we've got these cliches that we hear again and again, no return to boom and bust, fuel and food. And then, of course, we'll listen and learn. But people do want to see something more specific. As Leslie said earlier, you know, what did for them, I think, in Glasgow East isn't so much what they've done as what they've not done. Now, when you were in a position where Labour was seeking to defend a majority of 150, you're in a different world and you've got to worry about hanging on to the 1997 coalition that got Labour into places like Hastings and seats that people had said it could never win. Now you're in a position where the core vote is fractured. After the 10p tax row, people say we've got no idea what Labour stands for. And whereas previously I would have said it's suicidal, I think it's time now for Labour to stand up and say, look, we're going to do some things that put us on the side of working people, against business if that's what's necessary. Then people will know what we stand for. We'll make sure that we hold on to a large number of core seats where those votes are, so where those policies are very popular. And most of all, we'll put David Cameron, nice cuddly David Cameron, on the uncomfortable territory of saying, actually, I'm against this legislation on extending flexible working, or I'm against this increase in the minimum wage. If Labour does that type of thing, that's its best hope now of limiting the damage by giving itself an identity again, which at the moment it doesn't have.
Sundar Katwala, you are Gerard, General Secretary of the Fabian Society and one of the brains behind the Brown operation. It's interesting that Tom is picking up on what Leslie said there earlier, which is that Labour has absolutely failed in Glasgow East. The average life expectancy is the same as Iraq. If that's the record after 11 years, what is the point of the Labour Party and what is the point of this government?
Well, I think it's unfair to say it's done nothing. It's not achieved enough. But the idea that when David Cameron says to us the state has failed, these are intergenerational problems. There's been some progress, but not nearly enough progress on inequality. So Tom's analysis is correct. You've got 18 months to be a Labour government. You get to entrench your legacy. To some extent, you get to Tory-proof it. And that actually gives you something to fight on at the next election. What's got to change fundamentally is this. There have been lots and lots of tactical attacks on David Cameron from his right because you think it might be popular. 42 days was a good example. And all this does is it reinforces Cameroonian rebranding. The challenge is to test it. He's for fairness. We're for fairness and doing something about it. We're for fairness doesn't happen by chance. We're for putting up the minimum wage. We're for doing something at the top end. If he was so excited about the 10p tax, let's do something at the top end and let's see if he's for it or against it, because I think he's for the rhetoric and he's against it. That's what we've got to do.
Here's a suggestion. Cancel Trident.
That would save quite a lot of money, wouldn't it, Sunder?
I think you've got to say, what are we here to do? We're here to abolish child poverty. That's
Sunder, just that. This is characteristic.
I'm a supporter of that, but
let's stay with it for a second then, because this is characteristically what Labour. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cast you as the kind of apologist for Gordon Brown here, but this is what happens. You make a suggestion and everyone goes, yes, that could be good. Right, let's talk about everything off in the corner. No, if we've got these big problems, let's talk about the big blocks here that are at the centre of current policy that have been shibboleths that cannot be tackled, because we're now having to tackle unthinkable things for most folk in their lives. So perhaps it's time we put the big blocks in the centre and really focused our energy on them. And the kind of slogans about we're for fairness, just, you know, they mean nothing to people now if you won't tackle the big things. The one question I would ask about the record of Labour in places like Glasgow East is, where is the empowerment? Now, I mean, you know, where I would like to see, and I think the Fabian tradition has always been, is a kind of communitarianism, a self-help ethic, and aspects which have been not fully picked up by the Lib Dems again. But the only way that we're going to fix a lot of these communities is by letting them fix themselves. Because let's face it, armies of the poverty industry being shipped in at 9 and out at 5 have not changed the indicators. And the folk who deal with all the bad outcomes are the people who just have to try and tick over at night when things go wrong. So empowerment and cancel Trident.
Sunder, there's a pretty tough message for your next meeting with the Prime Minister.
Empowerment's half of what you need, because that's right, and Scottish Labour needs to build from the bottom, but poor communities can't fix themselves and bootstrap themselves unless you redistribute the resources from other communities. So, you know, have the discussion about Trident, and I would support that, but do something about rates at the top, invest in ending child poverty, narrow the gaps in education, invest proper money in that, let people see it. Ban outside earnings in Parliament and say to the Conservatives, you talk a good game, do you want to do anything about it?
Labour's, Tom Clark.
Sorry. Labour has, of course, been doing some of that. You know, I mean, I'm sat here now gloriously free of being ensnared in the government machine, but I'm, you know, saying Labour doesn't have any identity, but I wouldn't say that Labour hasn't done anything, and I don't know the detailed figures for Glasgow East, but I imagine it's much like many other areas where things like tax credits, like the minimum wage, like the extra money in the hospitals that mean that waiting lists aren't what they were, those things will probably have been having a real impact in Glasgow East, like they are everywhere else. But the electorate doesn't do gratitude, nor should it. You know, once things are going a bit better than they were, when they're still pretty bad, people are not going to be pleased, which is why, and there were many things wrong with Tony Blair, but one thing he understood is if you want the public to notice what you're doing, you've got to sometimes have a row about it. Let's have a row about foundation hospitals. Let's have a row about tuition fees. Let's have a row, in the worst and most infamous of all the cases, about Iraq. Now, he was wrong on many of those rows, but he saw that if you stood up and had a row, it would be noticed. Now, I think Gordon's problem is that he fights shy of that. He talks about fairness, but then he tries to deliver fairness through stealthy tax credits and things that people don't understand. What they do understand is that the basic rate of tax for the poorest people has gone from 22p, from 10p up to 22p. So if he really cares about fairness now, he needs to show the public he means it by doing something that's dead simple, maybe a bit crude, that they understand, and something that, above all, people...
Sunder, you can't stand for something without having enemies. Yeah.
Sunder, let me just ask you, talking about having enemies and having rows, obviously the Labour Party is meeting in its National Policy Forum in Warwick on Friday and over the weekend. Some of the trade union leaders, Tony Woodley, the Joint General Secretary of Unite, has an article in The Guardian on Friday saying, time to ban New Labour. Look at what's happening in Edinburgh. Look at what's happening in Cardiff. That's an old Labour agenda. How do you see that panning out?
Well, he's half right, because I don't think we lost Crewe or Glasgow, because the problem is Gordon Brown wasn't New Labour enough. But I think the party looks divided if people say what we need is a factional purge of one side or not the other. You've got to unite around a distinctively Labour agenda, and people don't know what that is. So you've got to put that up in concrete terms and say people don't do gratitude, but because we're the party that did the minimum wage, we'll do the next thing that is into that. And we know the Conservatives are now... in favour of everything they were against at the time. Well, let's jump ahead of the curve and see if they're in favour of things when they're happening on, say, child poverty.
Leslie Riddick, can I just ask you two questions about that meeting of the Labour National Policy Forum in Warwick? Firstly, how do you see it panning out? And the second question is, isn't it easy for Tony Woodley to say we need to be old Labour, as the administration is in Holyrood and the administration in Cardiff is, because those administrations don't have to do the most important and most difficult thing that a government has to do, and that is to raise taxes?
Well, this makes me think that Tony Woodley is some form of dinosaur. The SNP administration here, and as far as I can see, Rhodri Morgan in Wales, there's no particularly old dinosaur stuff going on there, or old Labour stuff going on, rather. People are not consciously seeing, first of all, the redistribution of wealth, Clause 4 and identification with the unions, full employment. These are not absolutely the kind of stuff on the top of the wall that the SNP are trying to knock off as they move through their political world. There is a new future ahead, and that's, I think, why the SNP have got a younger profile of support. And it's a whole mixture of things. You know, the business rates cut, for example, here was trying to deliberately stretch out to small business. The SNP has been critical of Labour for fostering a kind of dependency economy, a dependency culture to that degree. They would agree perhaps with Margaret Thatcher. They can say it. She couldn't. So there's a different conception of what an empowered Scotland could be, and it doesn't reflect old Labour's values.
Now, talking about dinosaurs and a new generation, let me just turn to one final subject before we move on, and that is the future of Gordon Brown. Sunder Katwala, you are General Secretary of the Fabian Society. Can Gordon Brown stay on, and should he stay on?
I think he will stay on. I think people will mutter a lot. I think people might manoeuvre a bit, and then I think they'll all go on holiday. And actually, if it was a question of changing the leadership, that would be really easy. But actually, it's a collective failure, because I don't see that anyone else has put up the popular distinctive argument that reunites the Labour coalition. You know, more personalisation and choice in public services and a bold localism. They might be good ideas. They aren't going to win you an election in 6 months' time.
I can't think who you're referring to there. Poor old David Miliband. Tom Clark, let me turn to you. If the Labour Party is still 20 points behind after the Conservative conference, is it over for Brown? Will we get men in grey suits?
Well, of course, there aren't men in grey suits in the Labour Party. I heard someone point out yesterday that in the last 45 years, it's only once been the case that an incumbent Labour leader has been challenged. That was Tony Benn's sort of suicidal challenge to Neil Kinnock in 1988, when he had no chance of winning. So there's no tradition at all of men in grey suits. There again, Labour's never been in quite such dire straits, certainly when it's in government, as it seems to be right now in terms of the polls. And I think the difference that Glasgow East has made is that whereas everyone was about to go away on holiday, and we saw the polls maybe go up 1 or 2% for Labour, sort of don't rock the boat, maybe things will get better attitude just setting in, this means that the talk will continue throughout the summer. And then it comes down to a question of how ruthless or not ruthless the people who are in a position to challenge him are. Having said that, one of them might have a go, one of them might even succeed. But if they do, I'm not sure it's going to be a great deal easier for them unless they're prepared to do some of these things that we've been talking about in terms of sticking their neck out and standing up for something, which is what Gordon Brown at the moment is not doing.
So maybe Glasgow East will introduce a tradition of regicide into the Labour Party. Leslie, can I just ask you, Tom Clark there saying that there's no talk, no tradition of men in grey suits in the Labour Party, but there's quite an interesting talk about the Right Honourable Member for Edinburgh South West, the Chancellor Alistair Darling. Two very interesting columns this week, one in The Observer by Andrew Rawnsley, one in The Times by Rachel Sylvester, pointing out, clearly briefed, very authoritatively, how appallingly badly he's been treated by Gordon Brown, how he clocked all the problems in the Treasury but was unable to deal with them. How do you see that relationship, that Alistair Darling-Gordon Brown relationship, panning out?
Well, you know, you wonder how you see any of these relationships panning out. They do seem to be conducted very much from the top down. But I wonder if there is a difficulty there for everybody in this regard. Folk think that Gordon Brown bottled it all those years ago when he didn't fight Tony Blair when John Smith died. Alistair Darling, if he's being kicked and he's putting up with it, you know, in a sense, hell mend him. And hell mend everybody else who's being told by a deeply unpopular leader that they should do what they do without dissent. There's a point at which people will just have to decide that if they have got a sort of wobbly limb, it might be time to consider some very radical action. But I suspect the people, it's a bit like thinking that you might have to amputate your leg to save the patient, except it's the leg that gets to vote, because it'll be the MPs who decide what to do with Gordon Brown or any succession. And clearly, if they do, whichever way they go, it's they that will probably lose their seats. I would imagine there might be someone would argue that there might be some merit in letting Gordon Brown take the pain. You go through an election, you lose it, and you then lose that leader, and someone else starts with a fresh slate, and there's something to be said for that. That presumably was the thinking behind Tony Blair hanging on, and look, the SNP won that election here. It just seems at the moment there's just no chink of light in any direction, and you know, to that degree you feel for them, but nobody's showing courage. And, you know, we don't put people in just to push the pork around and manage things like a manager. We expect at some point leadership. And if no one has got the courage to question leadership going awry, I don't think any of us are going to hold our breath for that party very long.
OK, thanks for that. On that grim note for the Labour Party, we'll end this week's edition of Politics Weekly, the last show of the parliamentary year. Thanks to all my guests, the Scottish political commentator Leslie Riddock, the General Secretary of the Fabian Society Sundar Catwalla, and the Guardian leader writer Tom Clark. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again in the autumn when we'll take to the road for the party conferences. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.